Everyone, we're starting the show a little differently because we're touching on something that I haven't touched on, and that is sound healing. That was Rob Avis. He is a West Coast-based composer, performer, and vibrational medicine man. He currently focuses his music on the healing arts, dance, yoga, meditation, just to mention a few things. His music is hailed as a mastermind by the LA Yoga Magazine. He is known for weaving a very intricate tapestry of world rhythm, melody, and harmonies for a whole different kind of genre. And I heard this album, and it really touched me, so I just had to have him on the show. So that is from his album Dial One for Mantra, and he did that with Shaman's Dream, and it is an honor to have this man on. Rabbi Avis, thank you very much for being on air.
Thanks so much, Jim. It's really great to be here. Thanks for the lovely introduction. I'm flattered.
It's really an honor to have you on here. I mean, I heard just that first track, and I was up dancing. You cannot sit through this. It's great, because I love to dance.
So good.
How did you get into the healing, sound healing?
My first experience was actually this sort of archetypal wound where, you know, I almost died in a car accident in my late teens, and my guts and my stomach was really torn up really badly, and in order to rehabilitate myself, I could either take a lot of drugs, or at the time, you know, the path of yoga kind of opened up to me and presented itself. So I had a really strong intuition that I could heal my own wounds and didn't have to rely on, medicine that would be always a constant in my life. So that's where I found the basics of sound healing, which is actually breath work. And from there, the yoga teacher that I had at the time was himself a really pioneering sound healer. His name's David Goulet. He practices up on the west coast of Vancouver Island, and he also has a place in Thailand. And he was doing sound therapy. He was putting people with terminal cancer onto beds full of speakers and pumping sound into their bodies and teaching them how to breathe properly and, kind of combining the two, the power of sound and the power of yoga together. And so that really intrigued me deeply. There was something about it that just, you know, really kind of kicked me at a very deep level. And I started following it right away and just wanted to kind of absorb everything I could about it. And so there was a lot of discovery in my early 20s, that was about 10 years ago, where I had this path to heal myself, and then I had this amazing love of music, and they were just kind of coming together in a really graceful way. So that's how it all started.
Excellent. Now, before your car accident, did you have, you know, a musical background?
Yeah, I'd been playing music for maybe 4 or 5 years by then. And my mom's a poet and a dancer and a painter. Both my parents are very creatively endeavored and had supported me a lot in my music. So, you know, I already had a sense that I wanted to do music. I just wasn't very sure about the healing part of it. I think I was 17 when that happened. So.
Wow. So from healing yourself, how did you start recording? And you've really worked with some pioneers in your career. I mean, how did you start working with the music, and did you yourself work with clients, with cancer patients, or with other people that were looking to be healed from one ailment or another?
I did, and it did start just with focusing on cancer patients. I was writing music for specifically for journeying, on particularly on these beds that my teacher had built. You know, he wasn't as musically inclined, so right away he kind of needed me in the picture to get a lot of the music written and kind of make it custom built for a meditational journey. And from there, you know, it was a lot of, at the beginning, it was a lot about me taking journeys myself, lying on the bed, feeling what it felt like to have the sound put in me. And this, again, it just turned me on so much that I started to want to get more of it and find out where else it was happening. And at the same time, my music career was starting to pick up a little bit, and I started to connect with people in California, particularly in Los Angeles, who were on the cutting edge of the electronic music scene, the dance music scene, which at the time were kind of separate. They weren't, it wasn't like the world of yoga and healing and all that sort of stuff was really, they were quite in different realms, but I was connecting with both of them and finding that LA was also a real center for the yoga movement, and a lot of the teachers that I was, you know, wanting to practice with were down there. So time came to leave, you know, Canada and come to LA and really merge these two worlds in a really deep way. And that's when I started to work with some of the people in the field that are really on the cutting edge, you know, and it started through connecting with yoga teachers and playing music for yoga teachers and playing in their classes and, you know, bringing sound healing into the yoga room. And it also started with, you know, playing out as a musician a lot and starting to produce dance music and kind of getting onto the cutting edge of DJ culture and that sort of thing. So it was just a matter of time before the two started to really meld together, and I started to meet people who were leading both industries and kind of wanted to collaborate. And you know, ultimately having a deep knowledge of music and the electronic music scene and healing was, you know, a little rare, so I got a lot of work and a lot of time to develop all of that. So
do you have people studying under you?
I don't particularly. I do teach sometimes, particularly where I live. I live at near a Hot Springs retreat center that has facilitation and facilities for workshops. So I go there and I sometimes teach sort of an active yoga and sound therapy class that has a lot to do with learning basic breath techniques and basic toning techniques, which toning is a word that's used for simply just using vowel sounds to create long tones, just singing long O's or A's or E's. This is kind of the beginning of, you know, sound therapy is really something that you can own for yourself. It's actually not, it doesn't have as much to do with tools and techniques and things outside of you. It's sound therapy at its greatest is really just you breathing and singing and finding your own sound within. There's a lot of power in that. So, you know, I'll teach that from time to time, and I definitely teach people how to produce music a lot, show them how to use software and give them insights. But I'm thankfully so busy with writing and with performing that I haven't had as much time to be teaching lately. So,
yes. So, talk about, we're really focusing on the dial in for mantra. How did that project come about?
Well, when I first got into yoga music, Jai Utal was one of the only people doing really, really amazing fusion. He was taking traditional music from India, also known as kirtan music, which is Sanskrit hymns that come from Hindu mythology, and he was singing them and writing them with a Western kind of funk, jazz, rock style, and it was, to me, extremely healing just hearing him take those two cultures and put them together. Mm-hmm. gave me the magic of the mantra with the real beauty of Western music, and that started my love for Jai. I had a deep, deep love for his music. My heart just grew exponentially by listening to him. And then I got a chance to meet him and do a kirtan weekend with him, which means basically hanging out with him for 3-4 days and singing all day, singing mantras from the East. And that just cracked my heart open even more. And then after that, I asked him if I could take a tune that he'd already recorded and do what's called a remix, which is where I take the parts and I rewrite them into a whole new, basically a new song, using a lot of more electronic production techniques so that you can do a lot with the sounds that are already there. You add a lot of things to them, you create new parts. And so we passed that over to Sounds True, which was the label that published the music and has published Jai's last few CDs, and they loved it and helped us, set a deal up with Jai and I where he could get, supported for his part in it, and I could take the parts and ultimately write a whole new record out of stuff that he'd already recorded. So, it Sounds True at the time, thankfully, was really wanting to go in this kind of new direction, and so it worked out really well to do this, take this next step.
Yes. Now, Shaman's Dream is also part of this project, correct?
Yeah.
And now, what exactly is Shaman's Dream?
Well, Shaman's Dream is kind of the sort of mama and papa of all the work that I myself as a writer has been doing with Sounds True over the last while. It's about 6 years ago I met Micheline Barry and Craig Coleman, who were the co-founders of Shaman's Dream, and they had this amazing ritual dance, ecstatic dance performance happening in LA once a month at a yoga studio. You had a full live band with amazing musicians taking tons of yogis on ecstatic dance journeys over several hours. And from that community, it was a huge community movement, and we do it regularly over many, many, many years. That was where a lot of our connections with the yoga community started to really become rich and fostered. So it was actually through a connection with Shaman's Dream that I met Jai, and then Craig ultimately, who acts often as my executive producer for music, was the one who kind of spurred the idea of getting the remix started and proposed the project to Shaman's Dream and kind of handle a lot of the overseeing of the project, and then ultimately help me musically a lot on the input side, just getting things together. So he's a real papa for me. Like, he's much older than I am, and he sits back and kind of just keeps things in a real good perspective and keeps the sounds warm and full of vibes. So
excellent.
That's a huge part of what
we're making. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So with that, why don't we play another selection from the CD?
Okay.
Do you have a choice that you would like to do?
Yeah, I would love to hear track 6. It's called Dina Dayal. It's a beautiful song. It also features Tina Malia on vocals.
Okay. If Zeph can get that up and running, we will be listening to one of the tracks from Dial M, from Mantra, and we'll play a couple minutes of that.
Drive.
If you're just tuning in, this is Jennifer Hellman. You're listening to AIR, and tonight's guest is a sound healer, Rara Avis, and we are talking about his CD, Dial M for Mantra. And what exactly is a mantra? Can we go into the whole idea of this project and what people need to know about it?
Absolutely. Mantra loosely translates as words of power. It comes from a Sanskrit tradition, which is based in Hinduism, where the archetypes that exist within any mythology, because if you look at mythology across the board, there's similar archetypes, there's similar, you know, sort of energies or characters that take on energies that are present in life, and many different stories are told in a way that one can learn how to relate to these energies, these archetypal sort of beings, if you will, that we all experience in our lives. And mantra is a way of getting in touch with these parts of life, parts of yourself, parts of life around you. When you follow the storylines of Hinduism, all of the characters that you sing about in mantra have a definite characteristic that you learn about and that you come to understand and know as a part of yourself. So when you're singing the mantra, you're ultimately trying to get in touch with that part of you and that part of life, but you're also participating in a song that's being sung over thousands and thousands and thousands of years with the same intention of waking up, of becoming more conscious. So what's amazing to me about mantra is whether you even know what you're singing or not, it helps, but whether you don't know or not, or whether you even believe, or if you have some doubt in your mind, it's actually not that big of a deal because it's kind of working on you at a very subconscious level, just singing the mantra and even hearing them. It starts to open you up because, again, they've been sung for thousands of years with the same intention by people who devote their entire lives to, you know, ultimately waking up and reducing suffering. So it's to learn mantra is a real, real big undertaking as far as really getting the depth of the culture and understanding the entirety of it. But just to sit around and sing a call and response sometime and just chant the name Ram or Sita and Ram for a little while, it really lightens you up. And I highly recommend it to anybody who is thinking about it or is at all curious. There's kirtan happening all over the United States, Canada, Europe. It's really blown up lately. And kirtan is the practice of coming into a group setting with a lead singer and doing a call and response type singing of the mantras. And, you know, there's many different other types of mantras. Some spiritual teachers will give you a mantra to work on a specific part of yourself. But for me, it's more about getting in touch with the community aspect and and kind of the larger umbrella of understanding Hinduism. So you'll notice in Dial In for Mantra, a lot of what Jai is singing throughout the record comes from his love of mantra. He's an amazing kirtan singer. Mm-hmm. He's been to India. He's met the old school musicians there that sing, have the original sort of lineage of mantra and kirtan in them. So that's a part of the real power that I wanted to bring out in this record, is to, you know, sort of contemporize it even more so that people can be moved by the mantra in many different ways. So,
right, you did it very successfully.
Thanks.
So the mantra really is sound healing through centuries and centuries, thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah, it's the original sound healing practice. It makes you breathe more, you're singing, it's opening up all of your passageways, you know, and again, it has so much love put into it. It's just such power. So yeah, it's really, it's the old school sound therapy.
Since it is the sound healing, can you tell us more a little bit about the practice of sound healing and how you go about to figure out exactly what kind of music to choose for different people? I mean, mm-hmm. You've got to be very much in tuned with their energy field and with what's going on with them to really understand what sounds, what vibrations they need to heal.
Yeah. And a lot of it, you know, for me was a personal journey backward in time to the earliest parts of my memory to feel into what it is that made me feel the most relaxed, the most safe, the most comfortable. When we're a fetus in the womb, the ear is one of the first organs to be fully developed. And so it's receiving vibration long before your brain is actually cognizant of what that means. Mm-hmm. And long before you're taking signals in from most other sensory arrays. So if you think back to that sort of, I mean, not think back, but if you imagine you're in a, you know, a warm liquid, you've got your mom's heartbeat pounding away, and a lot of those simple sounds, those early sounds, you can hear your mother breathing, you know, those kind of things actually trigger a really deep state in us when they're done right. So often I keep it really simple. I go with a lot of warm, what we call pads, which are basically warm synthesizers or supporting harmony that's underneath the sound. It's just kind of there as a drone. Mm-hmm. And then I go with a drum that maybe sounds a little bit like a heart, or I'll maybe even get a heart and pump that in there, particularly at the beginning. Have a lot of breathing just to let people know that they're safe and it's a comfortable situation. And, you know, I spent so much time for myself in that mode of studying and dropping into what made me feel good that it became an intuitive thing to just know what people kind of, what they like to feel in their body. Because the whole idea right now is to get out of the head and kind of get back into the body and get connected. So really, people like to feel like they need to get, you know, get moving and be motivated to get up and kind of dance around. And that's a really strong part in there. Like, I'm not at all, as you kind of felt, I'm not at all holding back on the dance vibe. I want people to really get up and jump in, because that's a part of the therapy. Is movement therapy is really just another side of sound therapy. It's just activating your own being and getting involved with where you're actually at. So, as far as putting sound therapy onto a CD, there's a lot of those types of things that come into play. There are very sort of elaborate viewpoints on frequency and what does what. And there definitely are some very sacred ratios around frequency that have to do with sacred geometry, based on what's called the harmonic overtone structure. And that's a structure that's in all sound in nature that basically gives sound a very fractal, sacred type of property to it. And if you understand that, you can definitely... A lot of harmony is based on those ratios anyway. So when you're writing in Western harmony, those ratios are present. And if you're writing strong harmony, it's almost therapeutic to hear. It's why Mozart and that type of thing was very therapeutic, because the harmony in that is just really perfect and beautiful and, you know, sticks to those type of ratios. So again, you can really go super far into that, and some sound therapists take that all the way and are looking for specific frequencies to do certain things to the body. I tend to keep it a little more general. And if I'm doing sound therapy one-on-one, again, I'm just trying to give people the cues and the permission to drop into their own body. So I use a didgeridoo, and I'm kind of scanning their body and just finding for places where maybe they're not listening to themselves, is my sense. So I'll just kind of play around that area for a little while. I'll use my voice and actually tone on parts where it's just more of an intuitive sense at that point, where I'm just hearing, using my ears and my mind to feel into what might be a block in someone's body. And, you know, if they're open to it, I'll put them on the sound bed and put deep bass waves through them and some heartbeats and some drums and stuff. And those often I will choose bass waves that are at specific frequencies, based on what I was taught by my yoga teacher, which is that around 60 hertz, around 80 hertz, around 120 hertz, there are definitely pockets where a lot of relaxation can occur. So I'll pump some deep bass waves into the body, and it works. Usually people go right into a really deep trance when they get that low bass moving through their bodies. So that's kind of one aspect of it. I just went to a sound therapy conference in L.A., and I was absolutely blown away by what people are exploring with technology, mm-hmm. and how technology is able to interact with some of the older principles of sound therapy. So they're using biofeedback, they're getting real-time feedback from people's various outputs within their body, and they're feeding it, that information back to them through synthesis so that people can actually have a sense of what's actually going on inside of them through music and change the music by ultimately slowing down their heart rate and dropping their brainwave patterns and stuff. So
it's amazing what technology is really
used
to help the body, because I think there's been a lot of noise that really put the energy vibration just out there to a point of chaos, and now we're turning it around and realizing what's out there is truly affecting us. So that's very sound, because it is pervasive, it's everywhere.
Absolutely. We're in the most noise-polluted time ever. I mean, you just couldn't imagine a more frequency-overloaded time in our culture's history recently. And, you know, technology gets a bum rap for that. It's really how the technology is used and what its intention is, because the same technology can be harmful when it's used for something that's just unconscious, that's not really aware of that connection, you know. So I think we're all definitely waking up right now to how connected everything is and how much we influence our environment and vice versa. And so, yeah, having an awareness of that, and hopefully someday, cross your fingers, having some legislation to reduce, you know, EM frequency radiation and other types of frequency that are just polluting all over the place, so that people can start to calm down and have a more dropped-in experience.
So do you think the music industry right now is waking up to the fact of what they're putting out there?
I think to a certain extent they are, and whether they like it or not, the economics of the situation has caused them to really have to change the model for the better, I believe. A lot more independent music is coming out now, and a lot more basically just for the more creative artistic side of making the music, those types of people are able to get to their fans much more directly now that the internet is involved, and the big companies are really struggling to keep that sort of mainstream grip. And, you know, music with heart in it, music with a lot of love in it, is healing, period. You know, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, North German folk music. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, really, I love all music and have a great appreciation for the vastness of it. And to me, that mainstream grip has really been stopping the good stuff from getting out for a long time. So, you know, now you're seeing so much more in the way of independent success with the advent of the internet that, you know, it's looking good. It's really challenging right now to keep the old model going, so you have to be kind of risky and take some new steps. But
yeah, it's amazing how many musicians are really getting noticed just by having a MySpace page. And there's been a few people who have really started making a name of themselves, and they just have a MySpace. And the social networking is really helping musicians get their stuff out there and noticed, and getting their own street team to really help them get their music out there. So the independents are really taking on some of the major ones. And it's interesting how a lot of the old-time players, I mean, there's people like the Rolling Stones are still playing, and they've been around for, like, how many decades now?
Four, almost.
Four. And yet there's still, some of the music is very healing. There is
Absolutely.
A really great music out there that's been around for a long time, and they're classics as well. I did want to remind people that if you have questions, you are welcome to call in, and the number is, this is when I have to remember to get the number out so I can actually do it, as I'm looking for that. So what are your feelings about the music that's coming out? Do you feel that there are more people that are more showing their spirituality in what they're writing and what they're saying?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a really good question, ultimately. And for me, I know as a listener, I tend to really focus my listening on people that are at least somewhat focused in a realm of being honest and true to themselves and projecting that into the world. For me, that's as spiritual as, you know, really anybody can hope to be in these times when we're looking for guidance and leadership and often having to look within ourselves to inspire others to do the same. So you know, I'm constantly getting turned on to people that are pumping out an amazing amount of integrity and love in their art, not even in just music, but in creative arts in general.
Right.
And you know, I do feel like that is growing. I think, again, it's hard to get a sense of that by looking at mainstream media or being at all kind of connected into that engine, because it's still not reflecting those types of changes. But on a grassroots level, absolutely. When I travel around, even, I see a lot of communities that are facilitating and holding the same kind of space of giving people support and opportunities to really shine. You know, it's amazing how much of an effect that has on the world. That's, as we know now from science, can prove it, that you know, finding a good space within yourself and radiating that out into the world is what's going to help change everything. So,
definitely.
You know, I do see that a lot, and it's really exciting.
And it truly is growing. It's often amazing to, and the thing that's really wonderful, at least I noticed in Tucson and a lot of the bigger cities, they're having festivals where they're focusing on the local acts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's growing, and I think it's wonderful. So people have a central place and a large area that they can go to and see what is really in their own area and supporting the music within that area.
Yeah.
So I'm very much in supporting self-expression, and I think music is one of the beautiful ways and high vibration ways of doing it. So I love musicians.
Yay.
Anyway, those phone numbers are 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. And if you're in Canada, it is 888-815-9756. So what else do you feel that the music industry really needs to pay attention to that they're not?
Well, that's a good question. You know, partly right now I think it's about defining the market and where the market is going. The music industry as a whole is trying to adjust to the sort of online download, purchasing MP3s type market. Whereas a lot of artists are finding that it's actually better to just get out there and create a following by playing shows and really giving people a direct experience to get excited about and create some buzz around. So I think within the industry, again, no matter which way you go right now, particularly if you're watching the way the larger recording industry, the larger labels are trying to survive, it all keeps coming back to just people needing to connect with the artists and be a part of that. You know, there's no more like superstar status coming. You know, it's like if somebody finds out about my music and wants to email me and ask me to come and hang out with them and play, they'll hear a reply from me. I'll totally come and, you know, hang out with them, play some music. It's very, to me, that whole kind of low profile, sort of low star status realm is where it's at right now, and the industry is still looking to try and make stars and, you know, create these like one-hit wonders, and it's totally not working. I mean, I've done really big budget music production on the business side and watched that model, and not only is it not working, but the stars are getting burnt out so quickly because of all the pressure that's on them to make it. You know, it's like these poor people get pulled out of a hat on some talent show and get stuck up in front of millions of people with all the right tricks, and it's just not working. So that's a really good thing. You know, it's unfortunate that a lot of people have to go through that, and a lot of people have to buy into it. But I think there's more and more people who are switching off of that, turning on to the word of mouth, the social networking, the getting in touch with the artists themselves, and reducing the lines in between audience and artist, and making it so that people start realizing that, you know, to be a star is really just to be honest and true to yourself.
What I'm noticing is, yes, a lot of artists are going out there, but they're also trying to be green and environmentally smart about it.
Yeah.
But they're also, because they're doing green, the prices are outrageous to go to a concert.
Yeah. Isn't
this
the problem?
There's a give and take here.
Yeah.
So it's especially with the economy it is now, I will be very surprised if this is not a really sorry season for concerts just because of the prices and the economy being the way it is.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, and I've been wondering about that lately myself. I just read an article about greening companies, and it's the next trend, and it's really expensive and high-priced, and that in itself is not green. So it's kind of like we're taking these baby steps towards greening. Greening really means bringing it right down, back down to the roots, making it accessible, making it community-oriented. It's like you could have everything else green, but if it's $1,000 to go to see the festival or whatever, that's kind of an exaggeration, but,
right,
several hundred dollars for a ticket, it's unlikely that the community aspect is going to be strong. So I would hope that it's just sort of a slow shift towards more affordability in greening and more of the sort of grassroots greening efforts becoming popular, more permaculture type ideas that really take the flash out of green and make it not a commodity, but instead more of a real sort of, it's kind of a necessity. We can't really keep going in this direction anyways.
Right.
I mean, festivals are kind of a funny micro for often some of the problems in the world. I've gone to festivals that are supposedly quite conscious and left looking at all the trash and just the amount of waste and energy that's been taken through there and just gone, wow, I mean, this is what we're living right now. So I think that it's a step. The first step is this greening part, but I think hopefully it'll start moving towards more of an economic model that works for people, who can't afford to kind of break the bank all the time on these kind of things.
Right. Do you think the festivals, because of, it really is quite the balancing act, but it gets a lot of bands in one place, do you think overall the market is thinking that's the best way to go because there's more and more festivals going out there with bigger names?
Yeah. It's another good question, and I have a lot of friends that are festival organizers, and they're always in a constant dynamic balancing act as to what is going to work. I think that the festivals that are the most successful have a core message to them or have some type of ideal or principle that they're trying to market, and that way the music model can be a bit more flexible. They can kind of some years focus on really heavy hitting names and some other years just focus on a lot of really good content to try and get the numbers, because ultimately the cause will pull a bunch of people towards them. Right now I'm thinking about Earth Dance, which is a global festival. A really good friend of mine, Chris, is the founder. It's 360 cities, around the world doing the Prayer for Peace. Thinking about Lightning in a Bottle in Southern California, which is an artist collective where they really, really, really focus on a lot of free-form creativity, and they're by far one of the greener festivals that I know of, and it's very reasonably priced for an amazing amount of stuff that you get over the weekend. It's in Santa Barbara. And so there are festivals like that around that are leading in that kind of model, and again, they have great talent, and the bands are amazing, but they also have this really core message and kind of vibe that they're bringing out.
And that does make quite the difference. And just the energy of what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, it really does.
Yeah.
So I think I'm thinking of playing another track.
Okay.
You want to play number 3?
Yeah, let's do it. Jazz Dub Shack.
All right. Zeph, can you get number 3 up for us? What is the story behind this one while he's getting it queued up?
Well, this one was more of, again, there's a little bit of humor that we all share, Jai, myself, and the record label, around just kind of taking a little bit of the seriousness out of spirituality, not getting too serious. We love the seriousness, but it's nice to kind of also have a little bit of humor in there. So we kind of we wanted to play around with a few of the names for the song and obviously for the album so that it just wasn't all references to the mantras and chanting. So this one we kind of toyed around with a little bit. Dub is a phrase from electronic music that means basically taking old material and reworking it with an electronic vibe. So this is kind of the idea is that we had a little party shack going with Jai. It's kind of a funky tune, and this is his dub song. So, and it's featuring his beautiful wife, Nubia, who's whispering the chants at the beginning.
Excellent.
Yeah.
so hard. Money, 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 so hard. Money, 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 so hard. Money, 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 so hard. Money, 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 so
another track from Dial M for Mantra. We are talking to Rara Avis, and you have tons of projects that you're working on. So what are you working on right now?
Well, right now I'm working on producing a record for a singer named Joey Lugassi, who is a really good friend of Jai's and another amazing kirtan singer. This is more of a record from scratch where we're coming up. He's got the songs that he sings with as a singer with a harmonium, and ultimately we're kind of crafting the record from scratch. So it's a lot more of a project in writing wise, which is really exciting. And he lives in LA. He's a really, really great guy. So we're doing that. I have a collaboration with two underground producers from the electronic world. One's named Imani Friend and the other one's Trevor Moon Tribe, as he's known. And they're both really groundbreaking producers for electronic music in the southwest of the U.S. So we're called Desert Dwellers. And right now we're working on our next album called Gypsy Trails, which is a fusion album of music from India all the way along the old Gypsy Trails to Spain. So you're covering Morocco, Afghanistan, Egypt. We're taking traditional music from those parts of the world and fusing it with dance music, so to try and create sort of an ecstatic dance journey that covers all of those flavors. Really fun project. That's probably coming out sometime in the fall. It's on White Swan Records. The Joey Lugassi project is going to be independent for now. We're not sure what record label that's going to go to yet. I'm also working on some remixes for a really great guitar player named Levi Chen. He's also independent. You can go to levichen.com to check him out. Just doing a couple of remixes from his latest release, which is really beautiful ambient guitar music. Also have coming up, really, really excited, we are getting the opportunity to score music to Eckhart Tolle's work. Taking his spoken word, his audio material, because he's published by Sounds True. And creating music, inspirational music underneath that has some dance floor flavor. So it's going to be danceable. It's also going to be, you can, you know, chill out and listen to it if you want. And that, if that gets approved, it's opening the door for a whole series of projects that focuses on different teachers. So Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, the Dalai Lama, a lot of the people that Sounds True has recorded over the years, we're going to start approaching and doing this similar treatment. And this will be a Shaman's Dream music project. Greg Colin is heading that up and doing a lot of the footwork to get the project going.
That's really exciting. I mean, that could take you in so many, to a whole different level and a whole different audience as well.
Yeah, it's kind of in that like really bubbly phase where I just keep getting warm fuzzies all over me when I think about it, because it's just one of those times where you feel your whole world kind of reorganizing around something that wasn't there before. So that's a really exciting thing that's on the horizon. And I've also started just working out with the founder of Earth Dance, Chris Decker, has a band called Medicine Drum, which is this amazing live electronic fusion band that does sort of techno-shamanic journey music. And so I've been hired this year as one of the main producers, and we're going to, our first gig is Harmony Festival in 2 weeks in Santa Rosa, and we're going to be doing some touring over the summer, so I have a lot of writing to do for that project, but it's really going to be fun. It's going to get me out of the studio and playing on stage a lot more than I have been in a while, so very excited about that. So, you know, it seems like a lot, but the beautiful thing about technology today is that I can work on multiple projects all the time from my home through the internet, and it's just like pushing each one just a little bit. You know, it's kind of like blowing in a sail and then sort of going over and blowing in another one. You sort of are constantly just moving all these things slowly forward, and technology is allowing you to coordinate all of that in a really amazing way. So, you know, 20, 30 years ago, I don't know if I'd be able to do this type of production so constantly. But, you know, nowadays it's actually not impossible. So, and it's a great way to survive as a musician, is just being really diverse and kind of watching what is successful and what's not, and not banking all of your energy on one direction, because right. Everything's changing so fast. So,
now, do you have any interest in doing like film?
Absolutely. I would love to do extended film score. I've done some licensing in my music for film, but I really have this dream of wanting to get deeper into particularly films that, again, have a really strong message.
Right.
Or are covering some material that's really important and really potent. Probably would stay away from pure sort of fantasy film. Although you never know. But yeah, no, film score would be great. Absolutely.
Well, there's one thing I just remembered. We haven't even given your website yet.
That's a good point.
That might be a good one so they can find more information out about you.
Yeah, and I just got my website revamped, so it's a great time to come visit. It's raraavismusic.com. So that's raraavismusic.com. And there's loads of tunes on there. I just got a great new player hooked up on there, so you can take your pick of like 60 or so songs to listen to and have a read-up about my most recent releases and become part of my team if you want. Go out and spread the music.
Oh, definitely. I'm on there now.
Great.
Now, what, I mean, you have no trouble going from, you don't confuse your projects as you're working from one and then switching to another?
Well, it's been a little bit of a learning curve, to be honest, both creatively and even emotionally, just getting really clear about what project is what, because actually, the back end of it is that a lot of the projects involve the same people, particularly around the executive production side of things. So it's been a learning process to keep things really clear. And for me, creatively, I have to just sort of be a bit of a chameleon sometimes. And, you know, a lot of times I'll travel to be with the people that I want to work with when it's really crunch time, and that helps define the energy of the project, is actually just getting together with the friends that I have and working with them in the space that I want to work in, and, you know, that'll help really kind of bring the sound into a new place. But we're also really aware of what each other's doing, and so we're aware of where not to go, basically. I'm always sending the stuff that I'm doing from other projects to my other collaborators so that they can just kind of keep tabs on what I'm doing so that we don't drift into that realm too needlessly.
Yes. Now, is there anybody you haven't worked with that you really, really want to work with?
Absolutely. I have a bit of a list. Michael Franti, who is a good friend, but he's just so busy, and he's, you know, really full-blown touring, and it's just an amazing being in the music world. Would love to work with him sometime. I would love to work with Sting. I got the chance to play for his birthday party a couple years ago in LA.
Wow.
Yeah, it was kind of a last minute thing. It came up out of nowhere. A bunch of friends of mine got booked to do this really beautiful private party in Malibu with more stars than I've ever come across in my humble existence. But it was really amazing just hanging out with Sting. He's a beautiful, beautiful man and just really relaxed. And, you know, I know he's done some more electronic stuff in his later records, so I'd love to work with him. I would, you know, I have a lot of icons, particularly from growing up. My parents had an amazing record collection of people where I'd love to, you know, just do like a remix here. I'd love to do a little work with Pink Floyd. I'd love to, you know, but those are all just kind of pipe dreams, but you never know. I mean,
all you have to do is say, this is what I want to do, and the universe gives you that opportunity.
Well, that's what I want to do. I would think just to keep it simple, Michael Fronte and Sting over the next file would be great.
Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure we have enough plan to play the last track. So I do want to thank you very much. Is there anything you want to say about track six?
This is track five.
Yeah.
That's okay. This is the track that kind of set the tone for the album, and it's the one that sold the whole project to Sounds True. And it really has the core vibe of the whole record, which is when you hear Jai sing right at the beginning, you kind of get it. It's just totally devoted to Jai's voice and also giving a whole new vibe with the electronica. So that's kind of the baby for the whole project. So it's all in there.
I want to thank you, Rabbi Avis, for being on my show. And again, his website is rabbiavismusic.com. Please check it out for his project and his music. He's got a wide variety of projects on it. It's just an awesome website.
We're going to
end it with one more tune from this song is from Dial M from Mantra. And until next time, this is Jennifer Hellman thanking you for listening. And with each breath of air, we do hope you gain new insights and inspirations. Many blessings to you and good night.
Beautiful.
Ta-da.